old. I'm only 70 years old. But I had friends 50 million years ago.
I served time in a prison, and I'm not sorry.
I'm a minister from Millport, New York, but don't worry, I'm not going to preach.
The world will hear this voice 6,000 years from now.
We're twin sisters from Ingham, Pennsylvania, and we're exactly alike.
Listeners, those were some of the people you are going to hear this afternoon. They've been brought on from all over the country with all their expenses paid by Calumet baking powder. This unusual idea of giving a half hour to the people of this country so we can hear their experiences was created by Phillips H. Lord. Calumet baking powder is happy to present Mr. Lord.
Now all over this great country, every day, ordinary people are having unusual and startling and dramatic and humorous experiences. Now, we'd never know about these experiences unless it were this program of We the People, so that these people can come to New York and tell of their experiences over nationwide radio networks. Now, all of you people here today, just take your time. Don't be nervous, because I'll probably make more mistakes than you do. All right, Mr. Davidson.
Me?
Yes, sir, if you would. I sympathize with you. I've done the same thing myself. So I'll tell you what you do. You sit down, relax for a minute, and we'll try Mr. Murray over here. You're Mr. Murray, aren't you, sir?
Yes, sir. William J. Murray from Holyoke, Mass.
Well, the time then is first time is yours. You just speak right out loud, sir.
I'm a farmer. A few years ago, I was hit by the Depression. Money was scarce, and things looked pretty bad. On my farm, I've got a small stone quarry. One day, I was digging in my quarry, and I saw some strange-looking marks in the stone. They looked like pig tracks, only lots bigger. Well, I thought about these tracks for a few days, and then I called in a scientific lady from Mount Holyoke College. She took one look at those tracks on the stone, and she got pretty excited and said, "Why, Mr. Murray, those are the footprints of dinosaurs." "A dinosaur," says I. "What's that?" "A dinosaur is a large prehistoric animal," she said. "Well," I says, "I ain't seen none of them critters around here." And she says, "Of course you haven't. Dinosaurs haven't been here for over 50 million years. Well," I says, "that was before my time." I wasn't much concerned about those dinosaurs until the lady told me that dinosaur footprints were very scarce and worth a lot of money. After I heard that, I got real interested. I cut a footprint out of the rock and carried it to the college. They paid me real well for it, and so I started cutting out more footprints from the rock and selling the footprints to other universities and museums. I've made quite some money from them, and all because a dinosaur was good-natured enough 50 million years ago to walk on my farm.
A few weeks ago, a minister appeared on We the People and told how he had built a set of chimes for his church out of old automobile brake drums. Well, now today we have another minister. He's done a very unusual thing. He is a Reverend Eugene S. Bardwell of the Methodist Episcopal Church of Millport, New York.
I'm a minister. My church is in a small town. Years ago, there was a beautiful organ in the church. It was responsible for calling many people to worship. One day, the organ broke down. It wouldn't play. Times were poor. The congregation couldn't afford to have it repaired. Dust gathered on the beautiful pipes. The services were conducted for 10 years without an organ. Now one of my greatest ambitions was to find some way to repair that old pipe organ. But it meant money. Money we didn't have. One Sunday night after services, Joe Van Arnum sat with me in the church. Now, Joe's love for that organ was almost as deep as mine. As a boy, he had spent his Sunday mornings pumping it. He knew what the loss of the organ meant to all of us. As we sat there trying to think of a way to pay for the repair job, Joe suddenly had an idea. Here he is to tell you about it, Mr. Joe Van Arnum.
Well, I jumped up and ran home, and I got my mother's vacuum cleaner. She thought I was crazy because she'd never been able to get me anywhere near that vacuum cleaner before. But I picked it up and raced back to the church. I turned the vacuum cleaner so that it would pump air out instead of sucking it in. And I attached it to the organ. We called the organist. And she was just as excited as we were. She sat on the organ bench. She blew the dust off the keys, and then I turned on the vacuum cleaner. We didn't even dare breathe. But the organist opened the stops and pressed down the keys. Then, suddenly, like a voice from the past, a great chord of beautiful music filled the church. We were so happy we could have cried. Our organ was working again after 10 years of silence. And it's been working ever since, has it, Reverend Bardell?
Yes, Joe Van Arnum's ingenuity gave us back the old organ. And Mrs. Van Arnum's vacuum cleaner started on a 7-day week. 6 days cleaning the carpet. The 7th day, sending beautiful music throughout the church. We have that vacuum cleaner with us today. We're going to attach it to the studio organ and then play. This is the vacuum cleaner. Listen. Hear it? Now we'll attach it to the organ. Here's what happened.
Remember, listeners, that this organ is being operated by a vacuum cleaner.
Utell with something to say.
Thank you, Phil. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Calumet baking powder have asked me to thank all you people for writing in such fine letters about their product. Not only women, but men, too, are singing Calumet's praises. We'd like to be able to invite each and every one of you to appear on this program. But since we can't do that, we do want you to know how much we appreciate your interest. So many of your letters have commented on the Calumet recipe book that we're offering it again. This book contains 119 new tested recipes, all of them tempting and sure to be delicious. So just drop a card to Calumet, Battle Creek, Michigan, and say you'd like your copy of the Calumet recipe book. Don't forget to include your name and address. And another thing not to forget is that Calumet baking powder is now selling at the lowest prices in its history. Why, there's a new generous-sized can of Calumet for only a dime. It makes an ideal trial size. Just ask your grocer tomorrow for one of the 10-cent cans of Calumet. And write tonight to Calumet Baking Powder, Battle Creek, Michigan, for your free copy of the Calumet recipe book.
Well, a few days ago, a little chap walked into my office. He's 9 years old, his shirt was out, tousled hair, right from the slums. Now, it seems that the boys down there heard people. They appointed Spud Swimson to see me. Well, Spud and I had quite a talk, and the next minute belongs to him. Now, you tell everybody, Spud.
What the boys want down there?
The guys want to catch his men out of pitcher's gloves. And we don't care if it's worn out. We got a team and a ball and a glove. And we're going to play the Ice House Gang. But we ain't got a catcher's mitt and a pitcher's glove.
Uh-huh. Well, now, Buzz, what's the name of your team?
The New York Yankee Giant Red Sox.
That's quite a team. Where does the team play?
Over by the Dope Pickle Woods in Brooklyn.
Must make a fine diamond. Well, now, who's on your team,
The catcher is Bats and the pitcher is me.
Oh, Well, now, who are some of the other fellows?
The other guy is Skinny Legs, Beck, and Butch. And the mascot is Ikey.
He's Irish?
Nah. And Fish.
Uh-huh.
Bobby's father is boss out to Phil Picklewood.
Oh. Well, now, just tell us again what it is that you want.
A catcher's mitt and a pitcher's glove. When I grow up, I give a guy a pitcher's mitt.
I have a feeling, Spuds, that there's some baseball player listening, and you might even get it.
Oh, gee.
Who has come 1,800 miles from Lusk, Wyoming, to tell you how he found happiness in a prison cell. Mr. Dewey A. Russell.
I was a convict in a prison. I got there because I had a girl. She insisted I spend more money on her than I earned. I started forging checks, and the first thing I knew, I was in prison. Then the girl deserted me. I was bitter, discouraged, sour on the world, and locked in a cell, I made my mind up to be a real criminal as soon as I could get out. But one day I was walking through the prison yard, and I saw an old magazine on the ground. I picked it up and took it back to my cell. Turning the pages, I saw a column of friendship letters. One was from a girl about 300 miles away. It was simple and frank. I felt I wanted to write to her, but I hated women. I threw the magazine down. I tried to forget it, but I couldn't get that letter in the magazine out of my mind. Finally, I decided I'd write to her, but I'd have to use the prison stationery, and she'd never answer a letter from a prisoner. I kept putting it off, but finally I was so lonesome I wrote. Imagine my surprise when I received an answer. Well, we wrote a number of times, and those letters came to mean everything to me. I started counting the days until I'd be out. Finally, that day came. I got out and went to see her, to surprise her. But when I found her, I saw she was a hopeless cripple. She could never walk. Well, I got a job and stayed in her town, and the more I saw her, the more I loved her. After a while, we were married. I built a chair for her to get around in, an office chair with roller skates on it for wheels. She does all her own housework, washes clothes, and takes care of our four babies. We have been married for 11 years now, and we're just as much sweethearts as we were then. Never once have I felt the slightest desire to do anything dishonest. I ask for time to come here and publicly honor my wife, a cripple who could take a convict, make an honest man out of him, raise four children, and do all the housework from her wheelchair. My wife is the sweetest wife any man ever had.
Now, here's a very smiling, genial gentleman from Cleveland, Ohio. He is Mr. Jack Davis.
Some years ago, I was almost broke. But at the same time, I wanted to start a restaurant. So I borrowed a little money from a friend. I got an inexpensive location, a few dishes, and started. But my restaurant was out of the way. Other restaurants had much better equipment. In a few weeks, I was almost on the rocks. Well, I sat down and I had it out with myself. I reasoned that people enjoyed eating when they were happy. I also reasoned that originality would put over any business. So I started being original. I got an old locomotive bell and rang it beside outside of my restaurant as a dinner bell. I stood out in front, and as people asked what the bell was ringing for, I told them it was the dinner bell. And right there was the best restaurant in Cleveland. When Friday came, I painted a big picture of a fish on the window, and I put little feet on the fish, and on the feet I put button shoes. On the tail of the fish, I put a propeller, and on the face of the fish, I put a mustache. My sign under this fish said, "This is the grandpappy of all the wonderful fish we are serving today." Then I started serving left-handed ham sandwiches. You have to eat those with your left hand. One sign in my restaurant says, "Our hot dogs are one-third of a yard long." Our hot dogs are a third of a yard long, too, wrapped up in 13 inches of bun. Well, my business has grown by leaps and bounds. People come from all over town to see what that crazy restaurant guy is advertising now. A short time ago, a burglar broke into the restaurant and stole the cash register. And then, just to be mean, he took all the dried peas, barley, yellow beans, black-eyed beans, and lima beans and poured them into one big barrel. In the morning, when I saw all those beans mixed up, I started to throw them away, and then I thought, there must be some way to save them. Well, I put them all into one big pot and made soup, and I advertised the soup as burglar soup. Everybody wanted some, and now my most popular soup is burglar soup. My greatest contribution has been the back scratcher. Everybody has a place in their back that's hard to reach when you want to scratch it. So I built a 6-foot back scratcher out in front of my restaurant, and you just have to sort of ease up to it, back up against it, and it really works fine. Then you're contented and ready to come in and have a meal. Now, my advice to all of you who have a small business is this. Put some originality into it, and if adversity comes along like the burglar did to my place, twist the liability around into an asset. In other words, serve burglar soup.
That piece of music is called "I Wish That I Were Twins." Well, see if you'd like to be after hearing these twins. They're so much alike that nobody can tell them apart. Anna and Emma Briggs of Ingram, Pennsylvania.
I'm Anna. I'm Emma. Now, this is Anna again. I got a job as a stenographer, but one day I caught a cold. I didn't want to lose the job, so Emma... Yes, I'm Emma. I took Anna's place for 3 days, and the boss never knew the difference. Then, Anna, you tell them, Anna. Yes, it worked out so well that we kept the job on a stagger system. I'd work a week, and then Emma. I'm Emma. I'd work a week, and then Anna. I'm Anna. Then maybe I'd work 2 weeks. This is Emma again. Everything was okay until Anna started going around with a fellow she met. He turned out to be a wallflower, so she tried to pan him off on me. And that's where I made my mistake. He proposed to me, but he gave Emma the ring. Now, this is Emma. The reason we ask for time on We the People is this. When a young man speaks to me on the street, I don't know whether he's being fresh or whether he's one of Anna's friends. I'm Anna, and I don't know either. We'd like to know how to straighten it out. It's awfully embarrassing at times, especially when a young man tells you he thinks you're wonderful and then says, oh, excuse me, I thought you were Emma.
Well, now tell me, Anna. What?
I'm Emma.
Well, I'm sorry, then. Emma, now look. Do both of you like being twins?
We love it.
Well, here's Fred Dutell. Now, wait a minute. Have you got any twin brothers, Fred?
No, I haven't.
Then, ladies and gentlemen, this is Fred Dutell.
Thank you, Phil. I'd like to say something about waffles. You know, I think waffles are about the best dish in the world. All crisp and brown, and tender and luscious, with plenty of butter, and swimming in good log cabin syrup. When they're made with Calumet baking powder, well, you know the answer. They're bound to be better than ever. For anything you make with Calumet is sure to turn out light and fine. So why not plan to have waffles in the next day or two? They make a grand noontime lunch for hungry youngsters. Just ask for a can of Calumet baking powder, get some log cabin syrup, and delight the entire family. But why wait? Serve them this very evening. What could be more tempting than plenty of delicious, crisp, golden brown waffles made with Calumet? They make a perfect Sunday night supper.
Only 2,000 years ago that Christ was born. Let's look back 6,000 years. How primitive those people were. Now, what will people be like 6,000 years in the future? Will they talk with their minds instead of with sound? Will they look like we do? Will they spend weekends on Mars? Will they eat as we do? Or will they take their food in little capsules? When you think of the changes which have occurred in the past 50 years, you will realize what life may be 6,000 years from now. Dr. Thornwell Jacobs, president of Oglethorpe University, Atlanta, Georgia, has done a most unusual thing. He wants to preserve the facts about our present civilization so that the people in the year 8,113 will know what we are like. He is building a big crypt at the tomb under the library of Oglethorpe University. It is built on a ledge of rock. The vault is 35 feet long, 25 feet wide, and 10 feet high. The walls are 3 feet thick. The crypt is fireproof, floodproof, and earthquake-proof. In this crypt, Dr. Jacobs is putting models of trains, boats, and things which we use today in our everyday life. He is taking the encyclopedia, the dictionary, similar books, photographing each page on film, especially prepared film. He's putting this film in steel containers and exhausting the air so as to preserve it. Soon he will seal that vault, and it will not be open for 6,000 years. Now, when those people open the tomb, the first thing they will see will be a present-day modern phonograph, especially preserved to withstand the 6,000 years. On that phonograph will be a specially prepared phonograph record. What will they hear? They will hear the speech that Dr. Jacobs is going to make right now. We are going to record it for the people who will live 6,000 years from now. Recording laboratory ready and stand by. Start your turntables, please. I'll count three and then we'll pause for a moment. One, two, three. Now I present Dr. Thornwell Jacobs, Oglethorpe University of Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Jacobs.
Greetings to those who are within sound of my voice. You of the year 8,113. we of this age know the difficulty of digging up secrets of civilizations long since dead. We take this means of aiding your historical research. My voice is now being recorded at 23 and one-half minutes past 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon of the 18th of April, Anno Domini 1937. We chose the year 8113 as the time for this crypt to be opened because recorded history, to our knowledge, is now just 6,177 years old. We chose the year 1936, therefore, as a middle point of calendar reckoning. We added another 6,177 years, and thus determined that the year 8,113 should mark the opening of this crypt, which contains a survey of our present-day American life. We have included in the crypt many things which go to make up our life at this time. There are descriptions of what we eat and drink, of how we work, and what we do in our leisure time. We have left examples of our systems of transportation, communication, and housing. We have submitted information about diseases and the points at which we have arrived in curing them. We have included records of our religions and customs. We of the year 1937 looked back upon our remote ancestors as being savages and barbarians. Yet we too had wars among nations. We thought at the time that the principles for which we fought were important. And yet, as you look back through the centuries, you will perhaps in turn call us savages and believe that we lived in an uncivilized world. And so I say to those who hear this voice, the voice of one who has been silent thousands of years and whose civilization has been buried in the dust of centuries, consider kindly the life we led in 1937 as revealed in this, the first conscious attempt of any generation in history to fulfill its archaeological duty to those who follow after. Now, as this record is made, there are gathered here in this radio broadcasting studio some 250 people, and some 3 million people are listening over their radios. We of 1,937 speak to you of 8,113. We offer you our blessing, and we repeat to you the Lord's Prayer, the everyday prayer of our present generation.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
We the people speak. Next Sunday afternoon, we the people will speak again. Make it a family party. Gather around your loudspeaker as these folks come from all over the country with their unusual experience next Sunday afternoon.
Remember, daylight saving time starts next Sunday. So next week, we the people will come to you at 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Be sure that you join us again next Sunday afternoon when the makers of Calumet Baking Powder present We the People.
I just want to add, the calls are coming in from all over the country for baseball mitts for the little boy who just spoke to you. I know you'd want to know that before he went off the air.
This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.